Welcome today to our interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Michael Furtick, co-founder of TakingItGlobal.org and a leading serial entrepreneur and innovator. Michael, you bring a remarkable history of achievement to our audience. Considering your heavy schedule, we thank you for doing this interview with us.
No problem. I'm really glad that I was able to make time and chat with you a little bit about some of our work today.
Now, Michael, can you share with us your prior successes and the key lessons learned from each of these?
Sure. Well, I guess a lot of what I'm doing now started from a very young age when I was just a few years old, and my parents got a Commodore 64 as kind of our home computer for our family. So from an early age, I was kind of creating technology and kind of experimenting with that. The first project I actually created was a piece of software for the Commodore 64 when I was probably about 9 years old to manage and kind of organize sporting card collections. And after spending, many months tediously programming line by line basic programming, we went all over the city of Toronto, put up advertising and promoted it, and not one person ever called us back. So I guess I had a very early lesson with market research and the importance of, making sure that people actually want to buy or get involved with something that that you're creating. But I guess even in ventures after that, creating mydesktop.com, which was one of the first, online websites about technology and computers that grew to, over a million people a month reading our articles and kind of gaining from our relatively mediocre expertise at that point. But, we were just a bunch of high school students talking about technology, which we were interested in. We learned a lot about the fact that the internet and technology has really broken down a lot of barriers to participation. I mean, starting a business in the digital age doesn't really involve as much complexity as it used to. You can just put up a web page, sell advertising, and really be successful. So I guess for me, those I've learned a lot from those experiences and applying now all of that knowledge and experience to the nonprofit sector and creating a really innovative charity that takes advantage of technology and this interactive world we live in to really help provide more meaningful engagement of young people so they can be better prepared for the 21st century workplaces, learning environments, for the places where they'll contribute. That's really my focus now, so it's exciting to bring all of those experiences together.
That's one of the reasons why you conceived of TakingItGlobal.org. And what do you hope to achieve with this organization, and can you profile its history?
Sure. Taking It Global was really the first social network social good. So the idea is to apply a lot of the online community principles that young people find so engaging and so exciting into a space that actually highlights and emphasizes and encourages people to get involved in the major global issues facing the world today. Things like climate change, human rights, those kind of issues and discussions, applying really interactive, rich online experience to engagement in that. So working with groups like the United Nations and all kinds of different nonprofit organizations, whether they be youth-led or large ones like Oxfam and Greenpeace, and just really helping young people become more civically active and globally aware through those tools. And it's now grown to, over 6 million young people have used the website since it launched, and we have youth who are participating and using the site in every single country around the world that has internet access. That's over 200.
Do you see sort of commercial entities spinning off from some of the sort of discussions that are going within the ticketing?
Well, we have an interesting sustainability model as a nonprofit. Even though we are a charitable organization, we've developed some pretty valuable technology that's kind of the cornerstone of the website. And one of the ways that we raise funding is actually licensing that technology to other nonprofits and other groups. So we do have kind of a business model built in. It's not not a traditional charity where we rely solely on donations. So we've kind of brought some innovation to that as well.
Well, it sounds like an interesting sort of foray into the marketplace, and it's serving a real need. And I can see that there's a connection with Gen Y. And I know you've spoken on this group. Can you elaborate further?
Sure. Well, I guess Gen Y, or the Net Generation as it's sometimes called, has kind of recently, over the last 10 years, kind of come to age and beginning to enter the workforce. And it was actually back in 1997 when I spoke at the book launch for Don Tapscott's book, Growing Up Digital, The Rise of the Next Generation, that I really started learning more and looking at the attributes of this generation. And really, it's that my peers and people a few years younger have grown up really taking for granted all of the innovations that previous generations thought were so amazing. We take the computer and technology mostly for granted. We're not excited about Microsoft Word or Microsoft Excel, but really for us, the innovation that we kind of have latched onto is the internet. That's why the kind of term Net Generation comes from. So it's really a generation that's using and relying on and excited to interact with businesses, with companies, with their employers, with school, with their peers online in a way and with a level of comfort that no generation has ever had in terms of establishing and maintaining and creating completely virtual relationships. So it really provides a lot of interesting dynamics for employers and companies to look for when marketing products, when developing them, and when thinking about, you know, how to engage young employees.
You know, so that brings up this sort of question then. How do corporations and businesses and organizations engage with Gen Y? How do you get them involved? How do you ensure that you're connecting with that large demographic? And really, how big is this demographic?
Well, in the United States, it's the largest generation ever. In Canada, it's slightly smaller, but it's still very close to the baby boom. So it's really kind of often referred to as the baby boom echo. And it's obviously critically important to engage with them as consumers because, unlike previous generations, because of the influence they have through user-created content and through the Internet, they can actually influence or kind of prevent a large amount of purchasing power, far, far greater than any other generation was able to. So really, I think it's critically important to develop strategies to engage with them. There's no cookie-cutter solution. But there's a lot of books and tools and resources out there. And I think the most important thing is just to be really authentic. I think that a traditional, you know, hiring an advertising agency, developing a youth marketing campaign really won't work in this day and age. It's really about engaging with that audience to co-create something with them. And some of the successes of that are shown with things like the Doritos thing that they did at the Super Bowl, where they actually engaged with their customers, with young people themselves, to create the advertising they used. It obviously cost them far less than, you know, a traditional advertisement did, and it engaged and brought in more people than they ever could have hoped for. And there's many examples of that. So really looking at user-created content and collaborating with them to create strategies together.
I see it kind of ties in with Wikonomics in a way, right? Mass collaboration, but involving this sort of younger generation.
Exactly. I think they are really at the forefront of it, and they're the ones who are so comfortable with it. I mean, they don't need to be told, but it's really the business world that's kind of waking up to the importance of that.
You know, there's different sectors in the marketplace, like government and industry, education, media, and so forth. How do you see the demographic impacting each one of those market segments?
Well, we've talked a lot about business, but I think that education is one of the ones that's really critical. I think that, you know, traditionally education has been a little bit behind the times in terms of catching up to innovations in society. And right now, it faces a huge challenge in that a huge number of young people that are dropping out and kind of disengaging from school, something like 80% of those young people actually aren't failing students. So there's a lot of young people who are bored, who are kind of disengaged, and who aren't being engaged, you know, using the media and technology and the culture that they're so much of a part of. So I think the challenge the education system faces, and there's a great quote on this from the Partnership for 21st Century Skills, you know, it's bridging the gap between how students live and how students learn. And if we can't do that, I think we're in a lot of trouble because there's a lot of other societies around the world that are kind of re-engineering their education systems and integrating things like creativity and technology and all those things deeply into the curriculum. And it's great that here, you know, we're focusing on a lot of basic skills, but ultimately, if we don't invest in ensuring that we engage, you know, the most creative and the most dynamic young people who, you know, might not be engaged by traditional education methods, we're going to be in a lot of trouble in 15 or 20 years when, you know, we're competing with other countries for, you know, creative jobs and creative workforce. And in the past, that's been our advantage, but I think we'll lose it if we don't keep up in the education front. So I think that's actually the most important kind of industry that that needs to adopt this technology and better engage this generation.
You know, your discussion here has sort of brought up this kind of idea. Like, let's say I'm a manager, an IT manager, a business manager, and I've just hired some of this sort of youth generation, this net generation. What do I do to ensure that they're performing and delivering and engaging and aligning with my organizational goals? What do I have to do? What are some of the key things that I can implement to make sure this happens?
I guess the main thing that I would try to emphasize is just co-creating and making sure that they feel ownership over those goals with you from the beginning. So instead of just kind of giving them arbitrary deadlines or arbitrary goals, involving them in the process of actually understanding the strategy, understanding the vision and why those particular goals might be important, and having them develop them with you. And I think whenever someone's a part of creating something, they feel more ownership and are much more interested and kind of engaged in making sure it happens successfully. So I think that's a key to motivating and engaging this generation in the workplace.
You know, you have this organization, Taking It Global, which has participation in every country of the world. So you'd have your finger sort of on the pulse of what's happening worldwide. How do you see this youth bulge building out in different regions, and what are their differences and their implications?
Well, I mean, I think North America is a little bit ahead in terms of the actual boom of the size of this generation, but actually more than half the world's population right now, you know, now that it's caught up, you know, 5 or 10 years later, are young people. And really they represent a huge, huge number of, you know, active, interested, and potentially highly engaged, you know, consumers, partners, employees that exist. And, you know, I think we have an unprecedented opportunity with the way that technology is kind of providing all these collaboration chances to really engage and collaborate with them. So I think that obviously in regions that are developing, those young people maybe don't have access to as many opportunities, but at the same time, they're limited but still growing access to technology, especially in, you know, Africa, for example, is really allowing them to leapfrog, to gain a lot of knowledge they might not have had access to use the Internet almost as a learning tool in many cases, and to really kind of participate in a global discussion, in global learning, and things that would have been out of their reach in the past. So I think it's really a powerful force, and they are even a bigger demographic force in many countries around the world than they are here in North America. I think in economies like China and India, a lot of their growth over the next few decades is really going to be fueled by this huge, you know, youth demographic that's highly, highly educated and highly motivated to achieve. Whereas here in North America, I think we're somewhat complacent, and our, you know, our generation is a little more, you know, where we kind of feel entitled. And I think that'll really create an interesting dynamic in terms of how competitive our economy will be compared to theirs, because they're striving so hard to succeed and to grow. And it's showing the numbers. I mean, the growth numbers in China already have been year after year astounding. So it'll be interesting to see in the next decade how that impacts the world.
I know you're involved, like you said, with the United Nations and with various governments and, of course, businesses and so forth. Can you talk or share with us three current projects that would be of interest to our audience?
Well, one of our biggest focuses right now is actually the localization of our tools and our technology. So as of early last year, the majority of the world's new Internet users every month no longer speak English as the primary language. So there's a huge need and a huge interest for non-English content on the web. So we've actually launched our website in 11 different languages other than English. So that's been kind of the one big innovation we've been focused on, and, you know, developing and ensuring that content in languages other than English, I think, is a huge project and opportunity and need right now on the Internet. The second is really the challenge of social networking in schools. Obviously, you know, young people love MySpace, Facebook, Friendster, all those sites. And I think the challenge we're faced with is how can we, you know, leverage the excitement and interest and comfort factor they have with those technologies into, you know, productive learning experiences. So we've developed a whole project called TIGED, Taking It Global in Education, that's really focused on connecting educators together around the world and providing them with social networking tools to use in their classroom, so that teachers in any classroom around the world can do things like blogging and podcasting and video chat and discussions without, you know, complex infrastructure and programming needs and all those things. So those are really the two key projects that we're really focused on for the future in terms of our growth, and really making sure that we can provide the education systems around the world with a way to leverage all of this innovative technology for good things. And a big part of TIGED is also Games for Change. So it's introducing and thinking about how we can develop interactive, you know, video games that actually help to teach different subjects. And we've, through partnerships, created the first few already on our website. So that's another interesting area is, you know, obviously there's lots of video games that aren't productive, but imagine what if we could, you know, engage young people in games that happen to also teach them important things at the same time. That's a pretty exciting thing for us.
Do you have corporate sponsors then who could see your vision and want to be part of it?
Yeah, about a third of our funding comes from different corporate partners. Microsoft is one of them. In the past, we also had Hewlett-Packard. We have Adobe that's kind of sponsoring some of our youth voices and youth artwork. So, yeah, we have a pretty diverse set of funding between corporate sector, foundations, and traditional kind of government supporters, and then, of course, our sustainable funding, which is through our own leveraging and licensing our own technology. So those are broken down roughly in thirds. It's a pretty even balance.
You know, you've got this amazing history. So do you have a story you can share with us from your work?
Sure. Well, one of the kind of amazing connections, there's, you know, dozens of amazing things that happen every day and every week in letters that we hear about. One of the big things that we were able to do over the last few years is really organize and leverage our network and our you know, reach around the world to give young people a meaningful opportunity to contribute to, you know, global policy on information technology. So we were actually able to organize a youth caucus to get young people from our community involved in traveling to both Geneva in Switzerland and Tunis in Africa. And through kind of fundraising and working with corporate sponsors and governments, we were able to bring over 40 young people to both of those countries to meet with their government ministers and to have a really unprecedented opportunity to actually have young people present at a United Nations conference and directly influencing, you know, public policy around the world on information technology. And the outcome of that was actually that a whole paragraph that young people wrote and created was included in the official declaration of that UN conference that has now resulted in, you know, young people being at the real core and focus of all of the international development work focused on, you know, technology in developing countries. So we were really excited to help make that happen and to bring, you know, young people around the world together to have a real impact in creating policy at a global level, but also a real chance to connect with people in their countries. I mean, even here in Canada, if we wanted a meeting with, you know, the Minister of Industry Canada, it's not going to be an easy thing to set up. Imagine trying to have that meeting in a country in Africa where the levels of bureaucracy are that much less clear. So I think that that's really a huge opportunity to connect those young people to those leaders in those countries. And we're now seeing a lot of development and a lot of engagement in those countries as a result of some of the connections that were made. So that's really one of the things that we're most proud of over the last few years having accomplished.
Now, Michael, where do you see yourself then in 10 years? Like, what's your vision of where you will be personally and your vision? Where do you think it's going to be? How do you think the world's going to look in 10 years?
Yeah, well, I know the technology is going to evolve a great deal. It's impossible to predict any of that. But I know for me, I'm really trying to stay at the forefront of leveraging and looking at how all these technologies can be put together in interesting ways to engage people and to bring more people together to learn about and really engage in some of these important global challenges that we're facing. Because I think if we don't collaborate and if we don't really engage globally with our peers in other countries and try to both have a common understanding of these problems, both from our perspective and their perspective, but also work together to take action, feel like we're a community in doing that, I think we really won't get anywhere positive as a kind of a common humanity unless we collaborate. I think the Internet, for the first time ever, has given us an opportunity to do that together and feel together in a way that never was possible. I mean, I think in grade 4 and 5, we all thought we'd love to, you know, save the planet and make a positive impact. And for the first time, it seems like with the Internet, those kind of actions combined together can actually make a huge difference. I think our responsibility, and I feel like my responsibility, you know, having had some success with the entrepreneurship side of the technology, is to really find ways to leverage it for real concrete social good and to ensure that people around the world who aren't included have their chance and their opportunities to be included and have access to things like education and business opportunities and success in their countries. So it's a pretty big challenge, and I don't know the specifics of it, but I think I'll continue to be involved in this sector because there really is a lack of, you know, meaningful use and engagement of technology in the ways that I think are possible because so much focus in the past has been on the for-profit sector. So I think that the non-profit sector will explode in the next 5 or 10 years given all the focus that's being put on it with all the technology innovations and things. So I think this is where I'll be for many years to come.
Can you leave us with some commentary on topics of your choosing?
Yeah, I guess one of the things I'll briefly talk about is the digital divide, and that's kind of a topic that's close to heart for us, and we actually operate a website called digitaldivide.net, which was actually one of the Webby Award winners this year, and which we kind of proudly maintain. It's a community of about 10,000 digital divide practitioners, and I think it's important to think of the digital divide not just as a hardware divide and of a, you know, people need computers divide, because I think over the last 5 or 10 years that's really changed. I think computers and technology is more accessible than it ever has been before. But I think what's really important to make sure that we do as, you know, developed countries and as the technology industry is not just, you know, send computers blindly, but is actually to support concrete initiatives and look at ways to make sure that people actually have the relevant context and content to make use of that technology to really improve their lives and improve the societies that we're hoping to improve by sending all this equipment and technology all around the world. So I think we're doing a great job with the digital divide. We're really improving it, but not to forget about context and content. And that's really where our focus is. And I would invite everyone also to get more involved and learn more about the digital divide and some of the work we're doing at digitaldivide.net.
Well, Michael, you know, we will continue to follow your significant contributions on a global basis. And you've you have this sort of amazing background, and you're still, what, under 30, right? So, you know, we thank you for sharing your time, wisdom, and accumulated deep insights with us.
No problem. Thanks so much, Stephen, for thinking of me for this interview, and I really look forward to staying in touch in the future.